and welcome to podcast number 571. This week we feature Vino Lingo, the audiobook, part one.
Tractor blight.
Crusty shit.
It's politically correct to say this.
There's one word, but it's probably, I don't know if you want to hear it.
Welcome to this very special podcast. As some of you may know, I released a book aptly titled Vino Lingo. In other words, wine words defined by the winemakers themselves. The book contained original photos of each of these winemakers in the spirit of the Vino Lingo words that they define. The following audio stands as my audiobook of the project, featuring the voices of each of the winemakers. This is part one, which will be followed by part two next week. It's fun, maybe silly, but definitely educational. Please enjoy, and watch for my next book, Vino Lingo, part two.
My name is Salvatore Avallone. I am the second generation of Avallone family involved in wine making job. I'm the owner of Villa Matilde. Villa Matilde is an estate located in Campania region, the region of Naples, and the region also of the production area of the ancient Falerno del Massico. So Falerno was a legendary wine since Roman Imperial Age, and was very important to know that this wine was the most expensive, important wine, was considered not just a wine, but in a legend in the story of winemaking in the south of Istria, in the south of Italy. He was produced, fermented, refined in the clay amphoras. Actually, also in Villa Matilde, we produce our wines fermented, aged, and refined, both in stainless steel and in amphoras. The amphoras fermentation is very important because through the microporous of clay, we have a micro-oxygenation of the mass in the wine, so the wine can become much more rounded and clear in the aromatic profile of the wine. We want to concentrate in a sip of our Falerno 2,000 years of history, 2,000 years of evolution in winemaking. So we produce a modern Falerno with a lot of history in the past, a lot of ancient technique that we use also today in this type of wine, in this type of production.
Hello, my name is Tom Mortimer, and I'm the owner and founder of Lucchetto Vineyard in Dundee, Oregon. My word to talk about is aromatics. And aromatics for Pinot Noir is incredibly important. It's why we have this great big glass that's a big bowl to try to get the great scents and nose that comes off of Pinot Noir. I often think that people have different preferences, but also people read senses differently. So what I might detect and what you might detect could be quite different. With aromatics, what we're looking for are just beautiful smells that are compelling, perfume, things of that sort. And how we make the wine, where the fruit comes from, what clones we use, the type of oak, the way we make the wine influence ultimately the aromatics, which is half of what Pinot Noir is all about.
My name is Paul Durant. I am the owner and general manager here at Durant Vineyards. And one of the words I like to describe wine sometimes is austere, and sometimes that can be good and bad. But in general, a wine that is austere to me is highly structured, not a lot of fruit to it, and maybe a little bit more, to use another word, grippy on the tannin side. So it might kind of smack you upside the head a little bit, but also I find that those austere wines, when I'm tasting out of barrel or early in a vintage, they often become very elegant wines and can be, that austere structure can become something really beautiful.
Hi, I'm Annie Scholl from Raptor Ridge Winery, talking about Vino Lingo here. Raptor Ridge tends to come up with a lot of slogans every year, and we put them on t-shirts at the end of the season. And one of the things that I threw out the other day to our cellar team is at the end of our group lunch, I'll often say, oh, well, time for you to go back to the salt mines. And people seem to enjoy that and think it was pretty hilarious. So that's one of them, is back to the salt mines, to toil away.
My name is Eric Risch. I'm with Pellet Estate Winery in Napa Valley, St. Helena. And my word today is barnyard, which also can be referred to as Brett or Brettiomyces. It's out here in California. It's not necessarily an ideal trait for a wine, but it has its purpose on some wines. In France, wines like Aubryon, Le Mission Aubryon, display significant qualities of Brett in it, and it is not considered a flaw. Where in the New World, out here, it is considered a flaw. But when you stick your nose in the glass and it smells a little bit of like a barnyard, you're talking about Brett.
Hello, I'm Jean Figuère, and my term is barrel fermentation. Barrel fermentation is a way to ferment red grapes in a 59-gallon barrel. I started doing that back in 2001 to try to make the wine a little bit more approachable faster, despite a potential of ageability. And so what I did is wanted to expose the grapes as fast as possible, pop the head of a barrel out, and use it as a mini tank. What it does, it not only integrates the wood tannins, of course, and the aromatic part of the barrel, but it most importantly softens the tannic structure and makes a wine that has a little bit more density. It's a fairly labor-intensive way of making wine, but it really brings layers of complexity and a real good round fatness to the wine that helps a lot. So, if you have any question, ask Ray. He knows, because he did it actually for many, 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 many days.
My name is David Spector. I'm the owner and winemaker at Bells Up Winery, and my word of the day is batonnage, which is an incredibly fancy word, which just means that you are stirring up the dead yeast cells and the little grape components, bits that are at the very bottom of either a tank or of a barrel, and the purpose of doing that is simply to build structure in the mid-palate of the wine. And you do this, well, you can do it you can do it either once a week, or I tend to do it about once a day, but I've always been driven nuts by using fancy terms to describe very, very simple things, ultimately. So whenever folks ask that question, they'll say, oh, do you do batonnage? And I say, oh, you mean stirring? Yes, I do a fair amount of that.
My name's Justin Seidenfeld. I'm the winemaker at Rodney Strong Vineyards in Sonoma County, California. And the word I'm going to discuss is batonnage, which is a French term which means the stirring of the lees. So lees are the solids and the dead yeast cells that fall to the bottom of the barrel. And we do this process of stirring that up by hand, not by machine, where it brings those lees back into the solution of the wine, adds creaminess, it acts as an antioxidant, so we can use less sulfur to protect the wine, and it makes the wine fresher and brighter and more full in body. Batonnage.
Hello there, Henrik Paulsen from Release Winery, Napa Valley. My vino lingo word is bleed or saigner. And to explain that word is that when you are getting your grapes in and you are starting fermentation, you want to bleed off a little bit of juice so you actually increase the amount of skin and juice ratio. So by bleeding off, you concentrate your color in the wine, and that is the saigner or the bleed.
Chris Hyde, Hyde Estate Winery here in Carneros. I'm going to tell you about budding. What we do out here is chip budding. We cut buds. And these are selected from dormant vines, and the plant material is propagated by cutting the buds and inserting them into the trunk of your rootstock. So, another term for grafting is budding. You cut the buds, you slip in the chip bud, you tape it up, you bury it, and then you come back and it comes right up the stake, and that's the grapevine right there.
So I'm Ian McClellan at Annabelle Wines here in Sonoma, California. I'm a cellar master, and what that means is that I have a good understanding of all of the logistics and the operations of a winery, day-to-day operations of the winery, and what it takes to keep wine tasting awesome throughout its entire life, which can take up to 3 years sometimes in barrel. So my job is to make sure that that wine stays clean and perfect the entire time. So essentially, I'm the liaison between the winemakers and the wine. So from bin to bottle is where I shine.
This is Martin Bernal Hafner. I'm the winemaker at Topel Winery up in Hopland. And the word that I'm going to go with is complexity. Complexity is used in the wine industry, but a lot of times it's kind of hard to explain because it can mean many things to many winemakers and many consumers. But I got to know the word basically when I was in France working at Chapoutier and speaking with Guillaume Poutier, who was the winemaker at the time. He really sought complexity in his wines. He didn't want a monotone, basic taste to his wines. So a lot of times he didn't just want perfectly ripe grapes. He wanted a diversity of ripeness. Certain kinds of tannins, that variations in tannins and layers that made his wines distinct. Because sometimes when you have very uniform grapes and ripeness, it also gives you a monotone wine in a way. So I think complexity can be interpreted in many ways, but it's understanding also what you want in the wine and what it's going to do to in the palate. Yeah, so basically that's complexity in a nutshell, just various ripenesses that will offer many things on your palate.
Hello, my name is Carissa Mondavi, and I'm here to talk about my family's wine continuum. My word is continuum, and for us, the name continuum speaks to the fact that we haven't missed a harvest since 1919, but we've evolved from shipping grapes first throughout Prohibition to, with the repeal, then getting into bulk wine here in Napa Valley, to then Charles Krug Winery in the pursuit of fine wine in 1943, to my grandfather beginning Robert Mondavi in 66, to now here with Continuum, we're dedicated to a single wine from a single estate. But I think continuum also means to us it's the cycle of the vine from year to year. And it's the continuity of wine being on the table since the beginning of civilized man. So there are a lot of continuums that this name means for us. So
I'm Dario Sertulli. I'm the owner of Castello di Amorosa. And I built the castle. I operate the castle. I'm no longer very involved in the winemaking part, and I haven't been for years. But I am the crazy bastard who built the castle.
My name's Nick Goldschmidt. I'm a winemaker from California, originally from New Zealand, but I'm also an inventor and an experimenter. And my whole goal in life is to make wines that last. People often ask me, how long is your wine going to last? And I say, well, 15, 20 years. And what's the proof? The proof is that I've made wine from those vineyards for 15, 20 years. I love it when a winemaker comes in and says, hey, how long's your wine going to last? And they go, 20 years. And I'm like, hey, dude, show me a wine you made 20 years ago. I didn't. So one of the ways that wines age is through this oxidation and heat, etc. So if you drink red wine, you'll notice that the color of the red wine moves from purple to red to brown to orange as the wines get older. The reason why wines evolve like that is this thing called polymerization, this polymeric pigment that falls out. So my word that I'm going to use for vino lingo is crusty shit. So when you get an old bottle of wine and you see this crust on the shoulder of the bottle, that's crusty shit. That's polymeric pigment falling out. That wine has become unstable. What I do in my winemaking is make sure I get rid of all that unstable tannin through a process that I stole, obviously, from another winemaker, because every idea I've ever had I've stolen from another winemaker. So you won't see that on my wine. My wines will go purple and red. They will age, but they will not go brown or orange. So if you see crusty shit on the side of your bottle, and it's not your birth year, the year you got married, or the year of your first child, sell it, get rid of it, give it away. It's just falling over. It's not going to be a great wine. Anyway, crusty shit. Delete it.
Sarah Fowler, winemaker at Peugeot and Calmer, and my word for this moment is DBADA, which is D-B-A-D-A. It's our acronym, and it means don't be a dumbass. And we focus on this on our cellar crew, production crew, and more importantly, interns.
Okay, so hi, I'm David Ramey. I'm the owner and winemaker, sort of almost, not quite emeritus, but heading that way, of Ramey Wine Cellars in Healdsburg, California. And Ray has asked me if there's a favorite wine word that I have. And I'm going to answer it in a different way. First, I'm going to steer everybody to Eric Asimov's column from, this is Friday's, from Wednesday's print edition of the New York Times, where he gives some very useful wine descriptor words. And then I'm going to say the reason I like that is, at least partly, is because, and I blame it a little on UC Davis's aroma wheel of some years ago. And wine writing has devolved to coming up with as many descriptors of the wine. Oh, this is cherries, this is apricots, this is prunes, whatever it is. And I don't think that way. To me, it's not about aroma per se, unless something's wrong with the wine. I mean, if there's volatile acidity or hydrogen sulfide or acid aldehyde, that's a fault. But other than that, the aroma, to me, it's about the tactility, the mouthfeel. And so to me, the descriptors that give an impression of the mouthfeel are the good ones. And I'm at the risk of being a little politically incorrect, I miss the days of the old Italians and the old French, often guys, who would describe wines in terms of gender. This is a feminine wine. This is a masculine wine. This is a muscular wine. This is a lithe wine. This wine is more Audrey Hepburn. This wine is more Jane Mansfield. To me, that's very descriptive. That tells me what the mouth is gonna feel like in my mouth, and I just don't think people drink wine because of the way it smells. I think they drink wine because of how it feels in their palate and how it interplays with the food that they're eating.
My name's John Terlato from Terlato Wine Group, and my word is delicious. And the reason I chose this word is because it's my belief that delicious does not require an explanation. Delicious is delicious, and nobody needs to have that explained to them. What I find interesting about this term as it relates to winemaking and wines is that delicious is the confluence of all the work that went into growing the grapes, farming them along during a vintage, picking them at the right moment, all of the work during fermentation, moving to élevage, and finally being put into the bottle. And when you think about all the thousands of decisions that are made along the way, the end result, theoretically, is supposed to be a wine that's delicious and does not require an explanation. So maybe it's too vague, but it's a word that the wine consumer can completely understand without it being overly technical. I could talk about fermentation and extraction and tannins and acidity and structure and length. Delicious is a reference to the alchemy that creates a great wine. All the pieces that come together at one moment in time in a bottle after many, many hours and weeks and months of work and thought and decision making. It's the alchemy that makes for a great wine. And this is my word and our hope as winery owners and winemakers is to present wines to our friends and family and consumers that are in fact delicious.
Okay, hello, I'm Giovanni Folonari, a wine producer from Tuscany, Italy. And today I wanted to tell you about two words that I always use to define the wines. Elegance and identity. These two are the most important thing that a wine should have today to be successful. Elegance, because you need to be able to drink the wine, enjoy it, possibly with food, and not just drink a sip of it and just leave it in the glass. identity, because there is so many wines around out there that if you have a wine that is just ordinary, even if it's good wine, people are not going to remember it. And thank God we have a few things that really help for identity in our case. One is our region, Tuscany, and one is the fact that we have a great variety that we grow in Tuscany that is called Sangiovese. And both of these, together and separately, I mean, we have great Cabernets or Merlots produced in Tuscany, they give identity to our wines, which make them stand out. So these are the two words that are winners for me.
I'm Matt Michael with Baldessari Family Wines. The word I'm going to talk about today is élevage. It sounds like a very fancy, pretentious word. It's really a word that essentially is a synergistic effect, or the lifting of a wine when it's put in combination with a new barrel. So things happen with the wine and the oak, particularly new oak, that improve the wine to a degree that it wouldn't be improved by if it was in a neutral barrel or a neutral vessel. That could be aromatically, it could be flavor-wise. So when it ages in that new vessel over a period of time, that lifting we call élevage. And so I demystified the word, and it's not a fancy word. Anyone can use it there.
Okay, I'm Michael Moyer. I'm the director of wine and viticulture at Lake Michigan College. And the vino lingo term for today is enology. Now, enology is spelled E-N-O-L-O-G-Y, and it's the science of wine. And that word comes from, just like biology is the science of life, right? Enology, if you look in British English, it's spelled O-E-N, where in English we get rid of the O at the beginning and just E-N. O-L-O-G-Y. Well, O-E-N is the Greek word for wine. So there you have it. Enology is the science of wine.
Bonjour. My name is Jean-Charles Boisset with the Boisset Collection. And my word today will be excess. Why excess? Because I recommend everyone to use wine as the catalyst of discussion. And to use wine to be adventurous, to be audacious, to use multiple bottles of wine throughout the meal to discover the world at large, and to be excessive with what you eat, what you drink, what you do, what you experience, and to allow a large part of excess, as life is a theater, to really discover in an adventurous way the world and others. So to excess.
Hi, I'm Casey Stringer from Stringer Cellars. My wine term is feral. I love making Syrah. I've been using Syrah grapes from cold climate vineyards in Mendocino County, and they can be downright feral sometimes. And I describe that word to, when I'm tasting with people, and just say it's the wild, sweaty, stinky, bloodiness that cold climate Syrah can sometimes get. I love it. Sometimes people don't get it, but that's my kind of wine.
Hi, this is Casey Wiersba at Shady Lane Cellars, and our vino lingo phrase of the day is fermentation cap. So when a winemaker talks about a fermentation cap, we're referring to the skins and seeds that float to the top of the red fermentation. Red fermentations are a combination of skins, seeds, and pulp. And as the fermentation gets going and the yeast and enzymes start breaking the skin, seeds, and pulp down, the juice sinks to the bottom, or juicy wine rather, because it's heavier, and the solids float to the top. And usually that is skins and maybe a couple seeds. So that fermentation cap are the solids that float to the top of the fermentation.
Hi, I'm Aaron Pott, and I'm the owner of Pot Wine. And I'm not going to do a word today. I'm going to do a phrase. And the phrase is, ça sent la jeune fille qui se néglige. And it literally means, that smells like the young girl that neglects herself. And I think it's a perfect phrase for those stinky, smelly wines. As a father of two young girls age 10 and 12, I can tell you that their feet are beastly.
Hello, my name is Wally Maurer from Domaine Berrien Cellars,
And I'm going to tell you about a word that we use here in wine growing called green harvest. Short, AKA, thinning. And what we try to do is a grapevine can produce 80 to 90 clusters of grapes. We need to leave those buds so we have something for Mother Nature. But we cannot get all of those grapes ripe enough to make the phenolic quality of wine that we're looking for. So we need to take part of the crop off, which we throw to the ground when they're green. There's the green part of the harvest. And we take these off just like we're harvesting. We throw them on the ground so the remaining grapes can get riper and have a higher level of quality, giving us, again, a higher probability of making a better bottle of wine later. Green harvest is something that is practiced the world around. So expect it, and really expect it from an estate winery where you hope that they're in cahoots. The wine grower and the winemaker are doing things like that to bring you a better bottle of wine. The grapes never leave my property unless they go home with you.
I'm Elias Fernandez, winemaker here at Schaefer Vineyards. The word I'm defining is hillside select. So what is hillside select to me? Hillside select is, first of all, the selection of the best Cabernet clones here on the Schaefer property. That will be determined by the vintage and how Mother Nature affected each of the clones here at Schaefer Vineyards. And then the wine itself is defined by where it's grown, the Stag's Leap District. The wine is always dark in color, soft in tannin, really a wine of a place. I mean, it's a very unique wine. Always the same, powerful, soft, rich tannin, just a nice wine to drink now or age. It does age beautifully. I mean, I had the 78 maybe a month ago, and it's still a lively wine, still color, life in it. So, yeah.
Hi, my name is Laura Diaz Muñoz. I'm the winemaker for Ehlers Estate, and I'm going to talk about house palate. So house palate is a term that we use when someone is used to drink always the same style of wines. So they like, or they get used to that same style. And when they taste something different, they see that it's different and they don't like it that much. So you develop a house palate because you are just drinking always the same style of wines or the same wine region. And you are kind of like limiting your palate.
Tony Kasichik here at Kasichik Vineyards in Harpersfield, Ohio. One of the words that we use around here a lot is ice wine. Cannot be made everywhere in the country. We do make it here in the Grand River Valley. Definition of ice wine, we have to pick the grapes at 17 degrees Fahrenheit or colder, immediately process them. No sugar additions. The must will usually be right around 40 bricks while we're pressing, and then we'll ferment that out down to a range of about 20 bricks, and you end up with a very sweet dessert wine.
I'm Tom Rinaldi, been making wines in Napa Valley for more than 40 years, and my term is going to be kitty litter box, as a polite way of calling Sauvignon Blancs that have that cat pea aroma. So it's a term that comes out from time to time and generally avoidable, I hope. But that's my term of the day.
Hi, Scott Scholl here from Raptor Ridge Winery, and we're talking about vino lingo and phrases or slogans that come up in winemaking. What we do each year during harvest is there's language that describe situations and ends up getting repeated by us and harvest interns. And then we memorialize that in a harvest t-shirt. So one from last year's harvest was, make it like it didn't happen. Invariably there's, at the end of every day, there's cleanup. And we say, you know, I want it like it didn't happen. Or there's an accident or a spill or a hose breaks and it's make it like it didn't happen. So make it like it didn't happen.
Hi, this is Steve Lutz with Linnea State Winery here in Yamhill, Oregon. And my vino lingo term is minimalism. You hear that talked about a lot in Oregon, and really what it pertains to is that we try to have minimal intervention in both winemaking and in the vineyard. We want the terroir to express itself, and so we don't want to over-manipulate the wine. So we try to keep oxygen from being introduced to the wine, and we try to move the wine around as minimally as possible, including using pumps that push wine with gas versus pull it with a mechanical flywheel. We try to use gravity in our winemaking. And then really, we try to keep it very simple. A lot of us don't even inoculate with yeast, don't inoculate for a secondary fermentation, just keep it very minimal. And that's my word for the day.
Hi, I'm Steven Rogsted, winemaker with Cuvaison. Today I'd like to talk to you about MOG, M-O-G. MOG is a term for material other than grapes. And when you're in the vineyard and you're picking grapes, you don't want MOG, you just want grapes. So we'll often, if we're purchasing fruit, include a little rider in the contract that states how much MOG is allowable. And it's generally none. But in the old days, when there was mechanically harvested fruit from vineyards that didn't have good equipment, you know, there could be a lot of MOG and you could actually reject a load for that kind of a delivery. But there you go. No MOG.
Thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast at lifebetweenthevines.com or sign up to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Life Between the Vines comes to you from Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our web geek is Dan Geeshan. Original music by Ray Pfister. Copyright 2023.